go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Talking by this point. You know, you go away for a couple of days and everything gets sideways. You even get that, really, with something that you do every day of your life, for the most part, you can even get rusty, and that was me. But I think, yes, I got all the buttons pushed. Everything is happening as it should be. This is the horn. This is a brand new show. Bob's back to the microphone. He's also talking about himself in the third person, which is never really a good thing. It's Wednesday. It's the 7th of September. Monday and Tuesday were busts. Monday because, you know, this is crazy. This is just nuts. Agnes went and got her flu shot. I haven't gotten mine yet. And she promptly began feeling like she had the flu. Now me being rational me, I said, well, shucks, you know, probably nothing to it. You just exhausted, dear, get a little rest. And then, by Monday, I too felt as if I had the flu. And everybody who's ever had it knows exactly what I'm talking about. Everything hurt. My eyelashes hurt. Everything ached. Everything still, well, doesn't ache as badly, but I think that's through more the miracles of modern ibuprofen than anything else. So Monday I was knocked down, and then Tuesday I was feeling none too good, and neither was Agnes. I think she's actually wearing a bathrobe and 3 quilts right now. She's freezing. It's probably 78 to 80 degrees in the living room there. And she's freezing. That's not a criticism. That's simply an observation of fact. So, Tuesday rolled around. Yeah, welcome to the horn, by the way. Did I say that? All kinds of new people tuning in all the time, and I have to remember to be genial in my hosting duties. I'm guilty of getting to this place where I assume that we're all just one big happy family here, and I don't have to. Welcome, if you're listening for the first time. I hope it will not be your last. I hope you'll join here with the Horn family and be happy and enjoy the program. And in amidst all the grim, godforsaken news of miserable fascists marching around in our midst in the United States, and ignorance, fear, and hostility stalking the land, we'll find a little time for a smile now and then. Hi, I'm Bob. Okay. I really don't want to say now that that's out of the way, but now that that's out of the way. So Tuesday dawned bright and surly. And I've told you a lot about how our daughter Margie wasn't feeling well and badly needed to have her gallbladder removed, and we've been trying to get that done for about a year. Up against a bureaucratic network of people who just don't believe that sick people are really sick, I guess. Or maybe they're fundies who believe that we should try the healing hands of faith first. Whew. But no, Tuesday rolled around, and yea, verily, Tuesday was scheduled to be the day that Margie got her gallbladder out. So I knew it was going to be a long day, but I also had planned on being behind the microphone that night. So I was on my way over to the Agnes and Margie were already over at the hospital. It's about 25 miles from here. And so I was headed that way, too, when the phone rang. It was Ferg. Or actually, it was the school. No, they hadn't expelled him or anything. He had, in fact, sprained his ankle in gym. Yes, on a sort of gray and not particularly pleasant day in early September in the hills and hollers of almost level West by God, Virginia. They were playing indoor kickball on the slick, recently waxed floor of the high school gymnasium. And, well, it actually, it put me, when I was told what happened, it put me in the mind of a Jimmy Buffett song. What doesn't? But it really did. You'll see what I mean when I get there. Put me in the mind of a Jimmy Buffett song from, I believe, Coconut Telegraph. Yeah, here it is.
Position. Crack with my leg like the shell of an egg. Someone call a decent physician. I know we'd roll. I can't pretend, though my mind is quite flexible. These brittle bones don't. I'm growing.
Yeah, see, what happened is instead of rounding first like Bubba did, Ferg was playing kickball inside the gym on the slicky, 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 freshly waxed gymnasium floor and rounded third. Well, most of him did. His ankle didn't. Ferg zigged and his ankle zagged. And I think his toe wound up somewhere around the middle of his shin. People I've heard from said, oh, yeah, we could hear that from across the gym, that snap, that crackle, that pop, not Rice Krispies. So, that was it. Bob, need to come get the boy. He's messed up his ankle. Probably needs to go to the hospital. Well, hell, we're all headed that way anyway. Why not? More the merrier. So I picked up Ferg, and as it turned out, Agnes did duty being bedside with Margie while she waited to go to surgery. You know the way that goes. The orders come through. Okay, now don't you eat a blessed thing or drink anything for 24 hours before the surgery, and you be here at the crack of dawn, and we'll get going. Margie went into surgery about 1:30 p.m. yesterday. So Agnes stayed with her, 17 years old, never had anything more complicated than a tonsillectomy or a wisdom tooth extraction. Yeah, so she was a little bit nervous. But Agnes, in those moments, is at her very, very finest. And she took extremely good care of Margaret while I had hooligan on one ankle, my beloved son, in the emergency room. Bear in mind, all the while, with even my hair aching, and Agnes in the same shape. Well, the long and the short of it is my plan for making it back in time for a show yesterday was, sorry. Oh, nice try. And we got home about 10:30, 11 last night, something like that.
Yeah.
And so I'm still not in the best place in the world, but we'll be okay. Like I said, ibuprofen seems to be doing a lovely job. 800 milligrams at a time. Much more, and I'm just going to, I don't know, chew it up for the refreshing burst of flavor. But we're pretty much okay. Ferg made it to school today. Almost got into a one-ankled fight with a kid who took his crutches from him. You know, it's just lovely. It's just parenthood. I mean, who wouldn't want children? No, we'll look back on this someday, and Agnes and I in our golden years. And I wouldn't do that again if you paid me. No. Ferg went to school, got through school okay for the most part. Fortunately, the twisting the daily, and it wasn't broken. It was just a very, very, very ugly sprain. Probably would have broken if he hadn't been following his old man's advice and wearing high-top tennis shoes. Good enough for Johnny Unitas. Good enough for me. And so Margie is also okay. She is not the most comfortable person in the world, but it was done laparoscopically, and she seems to have been in pretty good spirits all day. Had some heavy-duty pain meds to help her over the hump. And Agnes is running herself into the ground, taking care of Margie, and, well, Ferg was at school, and I was just trying to stay out of the way. So that brings us to today, i.e. the present moment. A show for this evening. Really, Bob? We're going to do a show? You're not just going to sit there and babble? Well, you know, I don't just do things. I don't sit here and tell you this little saga because I think it's special. I sit here telling this little saga because I think it's incredibly ordinary. And because, and by extension, because I think ordinary is actually the key to understanding life. Because those extraordinary events don't happen a whole lot in our world. I mean, this is the week that we are apparently having to spend reflecting on what 10 years post September 11th, 2001 means. And with all due respect to our usual prayer meeting edition, I'm not up for that, right? I'm just too damn tired to crank up the preacher right now. Here in about 15 seconds, I'll get an email from Kate saying, "Yay, the preacher's down." And Kate hates the preacher. Not because she hates the preacher, because she realizes how real that pernicious old fart is. You know, come on down. No, she does. Because he is real. Yeah, you can, Israel. You can hear him on just about any church throughout the South and Appalachia and practically all over the country any Sunday you care to. But apparently this is the week that we have to spend reflecting on September 11th, 2001. I was out long enough to go today and pick up Margie's meds, and I heard a radio advertisement from that station group for whom I once worked in the fifth smallest radio market in America, hustling some missionary Baptist church's salute to our first responders and military persons on this 10th anniversary of September 11th. And a local restaurant was going to be giving away a certificate for a free meal to any first responder or military person as a way of saying thanks. Now, don't take this as me gooning on first responders or military personnel, because that is not what this is. What sort of made me sick out of all of that? I mean, I was skeptical because it was a church, right? that's just because I am how I am. Skeptical, that is. But I wasn't full-on hostile until the announcer got to the point where he said, both of these special services honoring our first responders and our servicemen, service persons, are free admission to the public. And if you are a first responder or a service person, then we invite you to attend and wear your dress uniform as we honor this great nation. And that's where the gorge of an already less than happy intestinal system began to rise in me. They want people to show up in uniform, not to glorify them, but to glorify themselves. And if that's not enough to just make you throw up a little bit in the back of your mouth, as Stephanie Miller might say, I don't know what is. You know, another militaristic juncture between Jesus, who told Peter to put down his effing sword, and the most well or overfunded killing machine on planet Earth, the American military. Now, again, that's not me criticizing the military. That is me observing the fact that the Pentagon budget is the equal of what? The next ten militaries underneath it in order, you know, 2 through 10 combined? Yeah. So that kind of got all over me. And you know, if you've been watching TV at all this week, it seems like every time you click, 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 click. This week, on the Hunting Channel, a touching remembrance of that awful day, September 11th, 2001, hosted by Ted Nugent. You know, really.
This is the Home Shopping Network, and we have this week we have a special, very special offer of applique of applique house dresses with an embroidered applique rendering of the Twin Towers just at the moment when they began to fall. Only here on the Home Shopping Channel.
If we can make a buck off of it, we will dance on the dead themselves. And that's what this is. This is, but nowhere in all of the advertising and promotion have I seen any hint of introspection, because apparently 10 years is still too soon for us to really give any consideration to why September the 11th, 2001 happened. And I'm not talking about whether Building 7 was pushed or jumped or was shot or killed. I don't know. I'm talking about the underlying reasons of meddling in the Middle East that go back at least as far as Mohammad Mossadegh in Iran, and actually as far as our backing of that that bunch of thugs, the royal house of Ibn Saud, in their takeover of the Saudi Peninsula, away from, I believe, the Hashemites. That was about 1925, wasn't it? Ain't nothing gone right since. We got married to the blood-soaked oil culture and we have been faithful to our vows. Oh, goody. There it is. I conjured Kate. Yay, the preacher choked. And no sound bites from the fill-in-the-blanks, the political wannabes, please. Thanks for the tribe update. Did you say your life is ordinary? Dang. But it is, Kate. It is. It's you know, what we go through here is no different than any mom-and-pop operation anywhere else. And this is, you know, these are the things that happen when you're trying to get through life and help carry a tottering economy along and, you know, all of that. This is an ordinary life. The compelling thrums of special report noises don't often vibrate through our lives. You know, Jake Tapper is not on the scene when the transmission goes out. There's no one from CNN standing by breathlessly as you answer the phone to hear that your son sprained his ankle rounding third in kickball. Kickball. No, it is the ordinary that makes up a life. And thus, you know, thus we celebrate the ordinary. Or at least note it as we go through it. I don't think there are any celebrities among the Horn family. Feel free to prove me wrong otherwise. Multimillionaires welcome. I think, though, that we are mostly very ordinary people. We are raising or have raised kids, or maybe someday will raise kids. We are students, homemakers, male and female. We are gay and we are straight. We are working, wishing we were working, or remembering that once we knew what work was. Parents and grandparents. And it is an American life. All of ours. So, you know, this is just my way of sharing that out. Yeah, Ron's there. Right on the money. Why 9/11 happened, Bob? Well, you know why it happened. Because they hate our freedom. Nothing to do with manifest destiny and America's habit of sticking our noses and our guns where they don't belong. P.S. At least Ferg wasn't leg swept while eating a taco by a police officer. And he's got that going for him, which is good. But ordinary, ordinary, ordinary. Here's a case of ordinary. And a good starting place, I believe. It is the story of a man, 26 years old, named Raymond Johnson from South Carolina. He's a laborer. Being that he lives in South Carolina, Stan, he has no labor union to represent him. Thus, he has a $9 an hour job working for a small outfit that, of course, doesn't provide health care coverage. He also gets about 30 hours a week. That's $270 a week before taxes, which he, and you know, probably winds up paying more taxes a year than the Koch brothers combined. More on them later. Raymond Johnson, 26 years old, $9 an hour laborer, in a job that is not full-time with no health insurance. Sadly, all too ordinary in America. And then something extraordinary happened to Raymond Johnson. This from an MSNBC report. Raymond Johnson had some chest pain. And, of course, men of all ages have been taught, and well, to take all forms of chest pain seriously. Because we have learned that one is never too young to holler, "Elizabeth, this is the big one," and have it actually be the big one. But it wasn't the big one. Not quite. Not exactly. It was the big one, but it was the big C. Because, you see, Raymond Johnson was diagnosed with breast cancer. Did I mention Raymond Johnson is a guy? Well, Raymond Johnson gets breast cancer. Raymond Johnson has no health insurance. I don't know if you know this, but breast cancer in men is particularly virulent. In large part because in many instances when it's found in men, it is not found until way too late. We are slowly making progress on teaching men to check the guys out in the shower once in a while and not feel particularly ooky about it, because testicular cancer kills too. We've even made the great stride of getting guys in touch with the idea that keeping up with their the doings of their prostate, tucked away though where it may be, is not unmasculine. We haven't gotten around to encouraging, you know, male breast self-examination because, well, you know, there are Seinfeld episodes that talk about the man's ear, and, or shall we call it the bro. Oh, those man boobs, those are funny. Is that a B cup, George? Raymond Johnson was diagnosed with breast cancer. So, at the hospital, and this is the good part, he was encouraged to apply for health care help under the Breast and Cervical Cancer Prevention and Treatment Act. Because, in South Carolina, because these standards are largely driven by the state governments themselves. Raymond Johnson, at 30 hours a week and $9 an hour, is far too rich a man to qualify for regular Medicaid. Enter Jeff Stensland, spokesperson for the South Carolina Department of Health and Human Services, which said department will not extend on an ordinary basis Medicaid to a guy who makes $9 an hour working 30 hours a week. That $270, Raymond, don't spend it all in one place, you wealthy son of a gun, you. But Jeff Stensland, oh, we want to help him. The Breast and Cervical Cancer Prevention and Treatment Act is a program, a federal program, that is, run through the Centers for Disease Control. Or not run through, but the law itself is linked to a screening program that is maintained by the Centers for Disease Control. You know, the Centers for Disease Control, another one of those non-essential programs that your average garden variety teabag and re-pig licking doesn't see as necessary. Now, when I first saw this headline, I thought, well, South Carolina, you know, man with breast cancer, they probably think he's gay. Let him die! Because that is the prescribed punishment for homosexuals under the law of God and Jesus Christ, who is the same as God. But it turns out I was wrong. I'll take Jeff Stensel into his word. His department would not, on a dare, offer Medicaid coverage to Raymond Johnson and the vast wealth he has accumulated by working 30 hours a week for $9 an hour. But they really would like to get him coverage for his breast cancer. Stensland told MSNBC, "Yeah, we want to cover this guy, but we simply can't." At present, Mr. Johnson says he feels pretty good, but he's undergoing chemotherapy and he may need surgery to treat his stage 2 breast cancer. He also says he has no idea how he's going to pay for his care. Probably a little miracle that he's getting any care at all. He told MSNBC, "I just can't tell you how floored I was when I got that letter saying I didn't qualify for help. The bills are going to be huge. I have breast cancer. I really don't see how that's possible." In the last 4 years, South Carolina has also tried to get coverage for 2 other men. Why? Because they're men. Because they're men. Stensland added, "We're in conversations with the federal government on this issue. It's clearly discriminatory, and we believe it's a good example of an overly rigid interpretation of the law, a law that's designed to help patients with these cancers." Because you see, under the Breast and Cervical Cancer Prevention and Treatment Act, Raymond Johnson meets every one of the criteria set out, save for the fact that he is not a woman. Upon inquiry by MSNBC, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid said, "The law governing this specific program is linked to a CDC screening program. We are working with the CDC in South Carolina to see what options may exist to address this situation. We are committed to ensuring that all individuals who should be eligible for this program have coverage." Well, without the law being actually changed or someone stepping in, the only thing that's going to get this man coverage is a sex change operation. There's only one problem with that, though. South Carolina probably doesn't respect or make allowances for people who have had gender dysphoria surgery. But again, the man is at least getting treatment. He may well go bankrupt and lose everything he owns, but he might yet survive. David in Tennessee writes with a telling question. "Was he a U.S. Marine trained at Camp Lejeune? Paris Island? Camp Lejeune had perk in the groundwater there from wells for years that gave scores of men breast cancer. P.S. Yes, the government knew the water was toxic, but delayed for one-plus decades before finding other drinking water sources. Marine, if I say the water's fit to drink, the water's fit to drink. I mention this story not for the sensational value of it, but by way of suggesting that we get this story moving. Now, I'm sure it's already been seen by a lot of people on MSNBC's website. It's the Today portion of that website, the Today Show. Joan Raymond is the author. But seriously, get the story moving. Maybe somehow public pressure can be brought to bear so that men who get breast cancer can also be treated, especially within the Medicaid system, which should even be more gender neutral, being a government program, than any private insurance plan. But we might want to move quickly, simply because the Republicans would just as soon see Medicaid, Medicare go the hell away. I offer you Representative Joe Walsh of Illinois. He spoke at Mundelein High School yesterday. Said he supports turning Medicare into a safety net program of last resort for seniors with no other coverage options. Medicare should be used only as a safety net for those who cannot get health care anywhere else, he said. We have got, this is a quote, we have got to begin to pay for and be more responsible for our own health care costs. It would be a telling moment to find out how the kids in that high school responded. Because, well, I keep going back to what Cassie said. She said her generation can't imagine being 40, let alone retirement age. The teacher in the class Thomas Kuhn asked him what kind of reaction he was getting to that from senior citizens. Walsh responded, maybe I'm wrong and I won't be in Congress 2 years from now, but most people say, I'm in. I know we have got a big problem. The hell does that mean? Maybe I'm wrong and I won't be in Congress 2 years from now, but most people say, I'm in. I know we have got a big problem. Translator? Anybody? Set translators on stun? Help? What the hell does that mean? But that's where we are. Of course, knowing Republicans to be Republicans, they probably do chuckle a little bit about a man with breast cancer. Maybe they could ask Tweedledum and Tweedledum, Dumb, Dumb, and Dumber tonight in the big Republican debate whether a man with breast cancer and a $9 an hour job for 30 hours a week should just treat that as the death sentence that God intends it to be. That, of course, will not happen. By the way, the pageant tonight with with all the Republican wannabe hopefuls, I have termed that the dragnet debate. Dum da dum dum. Dum da dum dum dum. I don't know, should we listen to some of that idiocy or should we talk amongst ourselves? I'm really disinclined to let any of these freaks have our airtime. Your airtime. But I'm sure there will be a lot of tweeting going on about it. So that's, you know, that's kind of a starting place. We are still all quite breathless, I'm sure, over what I'm positive will be a really, really good speech by President Obama tomorrow night. And we might even listen to parts of it. Or will it be coming on late? Will it be on after 9 o'clock? I'm not certain. I do know for certain, however, that Diaper Dave Vitter, senator from Louisiana, isn't going to be watching the speech. He's been tweeting. Family and friends coming over for Saints game tomorrow. On to recovery and Super Bowl! Now, this is a speech to the Congress of the United States of America. That does include the Senate. Now, granted, President Not Sure has already bent over backwards to ameliorate and please the Repiglicans. It was going to be tonight, but it conflicted with the dragnet debate. And so he genially, in a spirit of compromise upon which this nation was founded, moved the speech to tomorrow. But it is an address to Congress, is it not? Yeah, we used to laugh about this when I was much younger. It's a joint session of Congress. Here. But David Vitter can't be there. He's got an NFL game to watch. Now, understand, look, okay, I know, maybe I'm being a hypocrite. I have bailed out on a couple of evenings in order to watch really, really big West Virginia Mountaineer games, be they basketball or football. I have. I'll offer this defense, however. I'm not a member of the United States Senate. David Vitter is. And this is a joint session of Congress. Congress is in session. But you see, that one doesn't even merit David Vitter's attentions. I don't know. Will there be any hookers there, Dave? Will there be any, I don't know, French maids uniforms, the leather-clad dominatrices with their little spanking paddles for you? Dave, you naughty senator, you. He ain't even going to be in D.C. Nope. He's going to be back home in Louisiana. Jeebus. Is there any kind of a sporting event going on tonight that the right wing can say, "Well, see, Obama's watching..." Fill in the blank. I guess not. No, there's all kinds of stuff out there. Something has been making the rounds today via the New York Times. New York Times Jeffrey Zeleny writing that the White House is considering a new moratorium on regulations that affect the economy. The White House says that that is false. And you know what? I'm funny about considering language and the nuances attendant thereupon, or thereupon attendant, so as not to leave my preposition dangling. They are not considering. They have considered. It's a verb tense problem. Because, what was it, Executive Order 13356 or 13563 that Cass Sunstein was blithering on about the other night in his letter telling Lisa Jackson at the EPA to, by God, don't you get in the way of filth getting into our air? Remember that? Yeah, it's only been going on the rerun stream for about 5 days straight, so it's probably seared into your brain like marks on a steak. That reference, 13563, 13356, I forget, says that all regulations must meet or must not create uncertainty for the job creators. Clark Stevens, White House spokesman, told the New York Times, "Those reports are false. The administration has a strong record of implementing smart, sensible steps that protect consumers, public health, and the environment." Except for that whole thing you just did to Lisa Jackson, right, Mr. President? Now, and by the way, just following up on the Lisa Jackson thing for a moment. What would you do if you were she? The first thing I thought about it all weekend long, I even thought about tweeting it, but got over the urge to. I was thinking, maybe it's time to resign, Ms. Jackson. You've done your job, you've attempted to do it in the best way you know how, and you've been told by your boss, the President of the United States, to go back and quit doing your job. Because you do know that the EPA, there is nothing in the mandate for the EPA that says they're to consider cost. Their only mission is environmental impact and environmental protection. Curiously enough, that's why they're the Environmental Protection Agency. And so the first thing I thought was, well, you know what? It's time for you to get off that sinking ship. But then I thought better of it. And I thought about the language that was used in that Cass Sunstein letter. The formal language of that letter, and I was reminded of this in an email from our buddy Tosh earlier today. The formal language in that Cass Sunstein letter was for her to reconsider. Now, everybody knows that in Washington speak, that means kill this thing. But language, you know, hey, the Republicans told us back during the Monica Lewinsky scandal, words mean things. And they do indeed. In this case, reconsider means take it back. Pass it around to everybody there. Because I didn't read anything in that letter that said these guidelines are not going to take effect. It was, please reconsider. So she sends the guidelines around to all the relevant department heads and says, reconsider this. Did you get anything wrong? Did you fail to carry the three anywhere, boys? Ladies? No. It looks like all the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed. Good. Dear Cass Sunstein, per your request, we have reconsidered everything regarding the air quality rules as promulgated by EPA. Having, as you requested, reconsidered those rules, we find no flaw in them. The rules are completely within the mandate of the Environmental Protection Agency, and we resubmit them as read. Best regards, Lisa Jackson. Now, that's almost like something out of a Hollywood moving picture script, isn't it? And in this case, the Hollywood moving picture script would be right. Because then, President Not Sure would be forced to choose between his fawning desire to compromise away our health and well-being with the teabaggers versus whether or not he wanted to be made fool of by his EPA administrator. I don't know if Lisa Jackson understands that she has the upper hand in this. But she does. And you know why she has the upper hand in that story? For one very good reason. Because she's right. Because she stands in a place occupied by some several thousand American citizens who will die this year if those rules do not go into effect. I've seen a lot of, the folks who will defend Barack Obama at all costs. I've seen a lot of pushback from them saying, well, you know, the process, just like Cass Sunstein said, the process begins in 2013 anyway. It's going to happen anyway. Really? Is it going to happen anyway? Well, then, gosh, let's wait till 2013 when 25,000, 30,000 people will be dead. When 10, 15,000 more preventable heart attacks will have happened. Let's just wait. Whew. Let's don't. Because, see, that it's going to happen in 2013 thing is conditioned upon, it's called a condition precedent, is conditioned upon the re-election of President Not Sure, who, if he is not sure right now which is more valuable, several thousand American lives or some jobs, is no likely to be more certain by 2013. Because there is no economic forecast that says that everything's okay by 2013. Right? That's what I thought. So Lisa Jackson, I feel safe in saying that there is a nice handful of American citizens out here who have your back. If you want to stand up for people who would otherwise be arbitrarily and capriciously slaughtered in the innocence of their lives, men and women, young and old. Our friend Matt Osborne and I are on opposite sides of this issue. And in the post that he wrote about the reconsideration of the smog rules. He made a reference, he was referring to Lisa Jackson, but I think it was early in the morning, and he called her Shirley Jackson instead. And that sort of jumped all over me. Now, I don't mean like made me mad or anything, but rather reminded me of something. It was one of those little moments that it's a gift from the god of irony. Because you see, Shirley Jackson, back in 1948, wrote a short story that has become a classic. Among other things, when it was first published in the New Yorker, Shirley Jackson received death threats for this short story. The name of the short story is The Lottery. Many of you may be well familiar with it. The morning of June 27th was clear and sunny with the fresh warmth of a full summer day. The flowers were blossoming profusely and the grass was richly green. The people of the village began to gather in the square between the post office and the bank around 10 o'clock. In some towns, there were so many people that the lottery took 2 days and had to be started on June 26th. But in this village, where there were only about 300 people, the whole lottery took less than 2 hours. So it could begin at 10 o'clock in the morning and still be through in time to allow the villagers to get home for noon dinner. It was a story written, Shirley Jackson was a Vermonter, and I guess we call lunch noon dinner in Vermont. I'll go ahead and ruin it for you, for those of you who haven't read it. Those of you who have know that a Mrs. Hutchinson is eventually chosen as the winner of the lottery and is then stoned to death, with one woman even handing a stone to her son, little Davy. Go stone mommy to death. And it's a story it exists on a number of levels, as any good literature does. But it is a story of how the innocents in our society are made to pay for the rest of the group. And so when Matt, in the course of defending the president's decision to allow several thousands of innocent Americans to go to their grim and dusky deaths because he's too pants-wetting afraid of the Tea Party, and in the course referred to EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson as Shirley Jackson, like I said, it was one of those moments when the god of irony hands you something, and well, damn it, if you don't run with the ball, you ain't in the game. Because that really, really is what is happening here. Even saying, 2013. It'll be back. They'll redo it. Sure, don't you worry about it. It's just not necessary right now. Why fight fights you don't have to fight? Be like Sun Tzu, the Art of War. Pick your ground. Well, I can't, and it's because I feel a connectedness to the issue that I can't just say, well, you're right, President Obama. You know, I don't know any of those people who are going to die unnecessarily, so fuck them. I can't do that. It is, in fact, beyond my ability. So that's where we start this evening. A gentle reminder, we are off to a very good start in fundraising for the month of September. Better than to be expected. Not ahead of the game, but better than expected. And so I'm not going to, you know, God's not going to call me home or anything, but it would be great if we could have some people step up and use the PayPal button or the snail mail address. And help us keep pace. Just keeping pace is a big part of it all. Keep pace with September. You know, basically what it boils down to is if 250, I mean, this is the basic number. If 250 people gave $10 a month, it would be done. It would be done. Be over with. Easy. Easy peasy. So, on any given show, we need somewhere between 6 and 10 Thrifty 250, we call it the Thrifty 250, 6 and 10 folks to kick in 10 bucks apiece. If you could be part of that 6 to 10 people this evening, it would be wonderful. And I kind of forget that this is Wednesday and I wasn't on the air Tuesday and I wasn't on the air Monday. That's my fault. But those are 2 days of, fortunately, we had folks helping out along the way. Thank you. Thank you for remembering. PayPal button's over at headonradionetwork.com. So, too, is the snail mail address. Try to make it as simple as possible. And as painless. You know, that 10 bucks a month part, that works out to less than 5 cents an hour for the programming once you figure, you know, everything out. Still not bad, huh? So, we'll take a little break and come back for your phone calls. You're lighting them up. A couple of lines yet remain open if you want to jump in. You know the number. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Total Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap! There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Total Genius. We got your soap right here.
And other bath and body stuff.
www.totalgenius.com.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Eight minutes past the hour. Hour number two does indeed begin. And we will go forthwith to your phone calls after a quick visit to the mailbag. A note coming in from Jude. Out in the great Northwest. Jude noting with regard to that little dodgy con that some church in Beckley, West Virginia has going on. It was the pastor of the church, Jude. She said, when you mentioned 9/11, Bob, and the request for soldiers to wear their uniforms to that thing, I missed who was requesting it, but it does bring back a time when Glenn Beck was speaking in Seattle about 4 years back at one of our large sports arenas. Women Standing did a quiet, and that's womenstanding.com, did a quiet intention across the street from the main entrance, and while doing so, there were far too many of his followers than I could count who stepped over, kicked, accidentally, knocked to the pavement, and bumped the black combat boots with flowers, each one completely oblivious to what we were doing. There were numerous individuals who actually walked directly into me and, after observing me with the boots directly in front of me, gave me that glazed stare, dismissing the entire stand. Never one word of apology or what were we doing or who the black combat boots belonged to. They were on their way to see their hero, and it was obvious that the symbol we were standing with made no connection into, by, or for their limited field of understanding. The really disturbing fact was that Glenn had requested on the dedicated website to his event that the military dress in uniform and bring their ID to attend his gathering. But get this, Bob, the military personnel were actually charged $10 a person, including the soldiers' family members. Thank you for your good wishes to Margie, Jude. And thank you to all of you who sent good wishes along the way yesterday. I was sort of just trying to keep folks apprised of what was going on with my tweeting. A lot of you sent good wishes along, and it was much appreciated. It very much made Margie smile, especially today when she could was a little more in the world of, well, coherent. But, of course, you know, Jude points towards something, as did the story about what's going on in Beckley, and that is this. That one of those hallmarks of the rise of fascism is the marriage of the military and the state religion. And if you don't think that the fundamentalists have the desire to create a state religion, well, you just haven't been listening to the show long enough, I guess. There will, you know, in the Dragnet debate tonight, dum-dum-dum-dum, there will be lots of that. And I'm sure that there'll be, you've all seen, or many of you have seen, that Family Guy episode where Lois runs for mayor of Quahog. And Brian the dog finally convinces her, listen, nobody wants to hear about your tax plan. Just say 9/11 a lot. And in the town meeting where she does that, she has the crowd in the palm of her hands. Because this is, and perhaps it's no different from any other nation state, this is and always has been a nation in which one can go a long, long way in doing what is called waving the bloody shirt. But it is frustrating to know that we are 10 years out from September 11th, 2001, and we have no more, as a nation, I'm not talking about you or me or us, we have no more of an idea of why September 11th, 2001 happened. The Illuminati! Than we did the day it did happen. No clue whatsoever. No questions answered. You know, little Charlie McCarthy Bush to Dick Cheney's Edgar Bergen sitting on his lap. With Cheney's hand, God knows where, making little Georgie make mouth flapping noises in front of the 9/11, the dummied up, faked up, rubed up, ginned up, stupided up 9/11 commission. No idea why it happened. And the problem is, or maybe it's the way things are preferred. As long as the American people don't know why it happened, then the American people will be plumb astonished the next time it happens. You might note that there was a warning has gone out from the FBI telling the American people that Al-Qaeda may want to use little single-engine planes to attack America. And, you know, it always comes with the usual disclaimer. No credible evidence has been found that they actually intend to do this. But, you know, we're just telling you. Just saying. Maybe that needs to be the new motto of the FBI. Just saying. Right? Yeah, so let me quit fiddle farting around and go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
I'm here.
Oh, hey, Susan.
Yeah. First of all, you mentioned dear old Joe Walsh and you needed a translator about him not being there and big problem.
I'm in. I know we got a big problem.
Yeah, the big problem, and here's the translation. The big problem is if he gets reelected.
No kidding.
Yeah, I mean, that's gross. Now, the reason I'm calling, I don't know about anybody else. I have had the TV off most of the week, and I will have it most of the next week. I'm not watching any of the stuff on 9/11. I refuse to watch it. I can't watch it.
Yeah, it's a bit much for me too. I mean, it started a couple of weeks ago. I walked in, and there on the TV box was the Twin Towers burning again. I thought, Jesus, two weeks? I mean, pretty soon it'll be like Christmas, and they'll start it in, I don't know, July.
Yeah. If the cons get me to the point of screaming, the shows where they honestly tried, like Rachel Maddow had a thing where she and some other guy honestly tried to do some honest digging into what we've become since then. I literally couldn't watch it because it's too painful. I can't watch it. I can't pull myself through that again.
No, and you know, let's remember that this is typical. Truthfully, it is typical behavior for the for-profit media. How many times, Susan? How many times did we have to watch the Challenger blow up before our very eyes again and again and again and again and again and again before somebody inside the for-profit media back in 1986 got enough common decency to say, you know, this might be a little traumatic for people.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not waiting for somebody to finally wake up because, frankly, I don't think anybody in the for-profit media has a decency button anymore. I've got an off button.
Yeah.
It's that simple. So the thing stays off, I'll stick my nose in a book and just forget about it. I'm not going to play their games. I know where we're going. And oh, here's something that'll blow your socks off. I'm having a little chat with one of my fundy stepsons.
Oh.
The one in Australia. And guess who brings up the F word?
Oh, no.
As in fascist.
Oh, that you are?
No, as in we are.
Oh, the U.S.?
Yeah.
Wow, from a fundy.
Yeah, I almost fell off the chair.
But then again, in many ways, it's not so hard to see from outside.
Yeah, and he's
because when you live somewhere else, and you know, I've gotten notes like this from Kevin over in China. When you live somewhere else and you look at the United States, you know, it's a real case of pretty is as pretty does.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
And he spent most of his life outside of the United States. And so it just blew me away that he's finally coming to see what I've been saying all along. You know, and Donald was saying all along, we're going down this road. And he's finally, the only thing I could do was say, you know, Ken, you said it. I didn't. Remember that.
Well, and I don't know. How fundy is he?
Very.
Oh, okay. Crackers turn into Jesus meat in your tummy and all of that stuff.
Plus he works for an oil company. He's a geophysicist.
Oh, okay.
Which, that's why he's lived all over the world. But just the fact that he is willing to admit that that's where we're going is a huge leap from somebody who was the way he was. Now, I don't expect him to start turning into a raging liberal anytime soon. It's not going to happen. I know that right now. But just admitting that, you know, fascism is, if not already here, it's romping down the road at a gallop, is a major concession on his part.
Or maybe not a concession, but just an acknowledgement of reality.
Yeah, Yeah, and then, well, yeah, you're, that's a better word for it. It's a major acknowledgement of reality, the fact that this is the way it is now. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if he never bothers to come back to the United States.
And for those of us who, stay in the struggle, we kind of have to make an America worth coming back to, don't we?
Yeah, well, especially when you consider that he and his cronies were the ones that caused this mess.
Well, I mean, if he was over there, not directly.
Yeah, I know, but it was him and his opinions and the people he associated with.
But there's another way to look at that, Susan, and that is that he is opening his eyes.
Yeah.
And that in fact, what it boils down to is he was manipulated. I mean, I've got a statistic here that I found in Mother Jones today that is ultra creepy. Question, and this is a survey from the Yale Project on Climate Change Communication. The title of the article is Views Differ on Shape of Earth, Climate Edition, and it comes from a quip by Paul Krugman that the for-profit media, my term, not his, are so afraid of being accused of being biased that if Republicans took up the stance that the Earth was flat, the New York, the for-profit media would publish a headline that says, "Views differ on shape of Earth." So, hence the title of the piece.
Mm-hmm.
But there were a lot of questions about global climate change, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Drum at Mother Jones says, as usual, plenty of people don't believe in global warming, and Tea Partiers really, really don't believe in global warming. But in a way, that's not the most appalling result of the survey. This is. Now, get this. And bear in mind that we're talking about people being manipulated into into a position. Now, you know the number of scientists that say that global climate change is, in fact, very much real. It's in excess of 98%. Okay? I mean, the number of so-called scientists who don't think it's real is so minute as to be statistically insignificant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, question 30. To the best of your knowledge, what proportion of climate scientists think that global warming is happening? 81 to 100%? 18% of Democrats agreed with that. That's the right answer. Independents, 18%. Republicans, 10%. Teabaggers, 1%. You get down to 21 to 40%. That's 10% of Democrats, 10% of independents, 15% of Republicans, but 28% of teabaggers. Now, those people, as much as we tend to think, to believe so, understanding the meaning of that word, teabaggers really don't live under rocks.
Uh-huh.
And most of them manage to somehow continue to breathe out and breathe in without outside help. But you don't get to a number like 28% who think that 28% who think that less than a majority of scientists say global warming is real without help.
Yeah.
And it is a failure of media. It is a failure of our side to communicate. It is this anti-intellectual bent that this nation has had almost from the very beginning, combined with religionism. God said it, that I believe it, That settles it. I've seen that on too damn many bumper stickers to count. Of the teabaggers, don't know enough to say. Here's another creepy one. The national average, don't know enough to say, was 26%. That's actually, it was only 25% among teabaggers. That's a barometer of things far beyond climate science.
Yeah. Did you ever read that book I suggested?
Which one?
Okay, science fiction has this nasty habit of being prophetic. Andre Norton was really good at it.
Yeah.
The woman was just, she did a, let me see if I can find it here real fast here. She did a book. It was about, basically what happened. It was the aftermath of the takeover of an anti-science movement and what happened afterwards.
Not good things, I trust.
To put it mildly. Let me see here. Let me see if I can find it real fast. I would suggest you... Okay. There's a compilation that has that book and the sequel in it, and it's called Starflight. That contains the book I'm talking about, which is called The Stars Are Ours and Starborn. The Stars Are Ours was written in 1954.
Yeah.
Long time
ago. Isn't that neat? I mean, not neat, but...
It's scary because the whole, you read this book and it made an indelible impression on me, because you can take that book and you can push it forward into the 21st century, and with very few tweaks you can have teabaggers.
Yeah.
And they bring down a world-spanning civilization. And, well, I won't go on.
I understand.
It's just amazing. But the thing with the, one of the reasons why he was forced into the admission that he did, he's a scientist.
Well, that's why I was asking about the whole, really fundamentalist, like 7 days creation fundamentalist?
Well, yeah, he's, that's the problem. He's a scientist, but he's also got that religion grafted on. But the science came first. The geophysics came first.
So he's only arguably insane 1 day out of six?
Oh, well, actually, it's more like 3 days up, six.
Sundays and Wednesdays and what? Oh, well, never mind.
Yeah.
But by the same token, I guess there are people who are like that. But, you know, more and more science comes out. I saw a story, David in Tennessee sent it to me the other day, about gene mapping.
Yeah.
And it has been determined that before leaving Africa, just trying to explain to a Tea Partier that they're, you know, some part of them's African. Yeah.
Oh,
only,
yeah.
Only South African and the white ones.
No, actually, the black ones, honey.
But before leaving Africa, we sort of interbred.
Gleefully.
Yeah, with other species of humanoids or hominids that are now extinct.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the names, but you know, one of them's obviously Neanderthal. But there were there were a couple of others, and the thing is, they tracked down through the genome.
Yeah, well, Neanderthal and what's after they left Africa.
Right, but what's important is they track through the genome, and the genome. I don't know. Compare it to light from space, Susan. You can measure. Oh wow, I need an astronomer. But you can measure light and invisible light, ultraviolet, that kind of stuff, coming from space, and you can tell how far away something is by how the light works.
Yeah.
That's about as complex as I can get on that topic.
Whether it's redshifted or not.
Right, and the same thing with rocks. The reason we can the reason that Louis Leakey was able to say that the creatures, the fossils found in Olduvai Gorge were as old as they were is because rocks decay. Certain isotopes in rocks decay at a set rate that can be measured over time. Well, now you know we've got one of those inside the human genome.
Yep.
And it says that that was happening at least 30,000 years ago, mm-hmm. and maybe 100,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know how you can be a person who says that, and I'm not, you know, I'm using geophysics as an example, but I don't know how you can, Doppler effect, thank you, Benny. I don't know how you can, on Monday through Friday, say that the laws of science govern geophysics, but on Sunday say the Earth is 4,000 years old.
Yeah, I know. It just doesn't scan.
I mean, especially in the oil industry.
Yeah, I know. It just doesn't scan.
I mean, for me to be able to pull that off, I'd have to drop acid, do up some meth, and smoke three pounds of bad weed and get drunker than Adam's off ox before I ever went to church. Because it takes that much to completely turn my brain the hell off.
Yeah, I think basically that's what he did. He just basically turned his brain off. Because that's the only way he could go in there and actually believe this crap. Of course, he's the same guy who, when he was trying to convert me, suggested that I convert just in case.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. which was kind of a dead giveaway that, come on, Ken, give me a break. You know, this was not exactly what I'd call a real religious zealot, not to me. Because you don't tell somebody, do it just in case.
Yeah, because you never know.
Yeah, you know, what are you doing? You got a quota or something?
Yeah, but you're missing out on some hellacious, you're missing out on some hellacious good cobbler in the basement of the Baptist church, Susan. You are. I mean, I'm just telling you.
Yeah, but look at all my friends in hell that I can have fun with. That is assuming I even believed in hell, which I don't.
Well, yeah, I mean, you really can't square, the salvation of Adolf Hitler and Jerry Falwell sitting there at the right hand of God and everything with anywhere you really want to be in an afterlife, can you?
Nope. As far as I'm concerned, they're gone. Just poof.
And if they're not, I don't want to be where they are.
Yeah, exactly. That's fine by me. And you know, the whole thing with my stepson is I think it's just getting to the point where he just can't take the stress anymore, and it's, you know.
Well, sometimes reality has a way of intruding, Susan.
Yeah, and I think it is, And that's okay. That's cool.
Well, it'll be interesting to find out if he continues to think we're on the sorry road to fascism. and you know, keep us updated. We'll talk soon, Susan. Take care.
I will. Give my love to Margie and give my love to Agnes as well.
I sure will. I will. Absolutely. Bye now.
Okie doke. Bye-bye.
News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Jim, how are you?
Fine. Look, I've got three things to say, okay?
Okay.
The first thing is about 9/11. And in memory of that, I have 3,000 lights that go on at the exact times that the Tower 1 was hit. And they go off at the exact time, p.m., that Tower 2 fell.
Every day.
It's in memory of those people whose only crime was to go to work that day.
Yeah.
And I say about that, number two, I feel about that the way the Russians feel about the city of Leningrad. Let no one forget, let nothing be forgotten.
And I'm not suggesting that it be forgotten.
And I am so happy to see that they are rebuilding that site, with which I am all too familiar because I used to go to meetings in WT7. And I used to work in the Pentagon that was also hit. And I lost people.
Mm-hmm. I understand that. And my point is that turning it into some sort of for profit orgy is the last thing in the world that is appropriate.
Profiteering. I'm glad that they're rebuilding the 16 acres. I'm glad they have the pools where the tower voids once stood. And I hope I live to see the restoration of that symbol of America's power and might. That's the way I feel.
And I think that's entirely appropriate. Now, you know, when we for instance, the late great debate generated by the for-profit media and the right wing, working hand in hand, as they so often do, about the Ground Zero Mosque. You know, that is contrary to the fitting memory of those who, as you well know, died going to work that day. So is the right wingers and teabaggers' response that health care should not include caring for those people whose lives were not ended, but rather were altered forever, and in fact, in many ways, ruined on that day. One individual who experienced that is within the Horn family and has been for years. You know, she knows what it means to have suffered on that day.
I'm sure she does.
And
people who were adversely affected by the impact of those buildings being destroyed and the toxic elements that were released. And this is something you cannot forget. It's something you should watch. And if you turn away from it, that's your business.
Well, no, I'm not saying turn away from it. I'm saying don't participate in the prophetized orgy of it. Consider it as you do in your own light, Jim. You know, you memorialize people in a decent and honorable way. But when you know, outfits like this Missionary Baptist Church in Beckley, or any number of for-profit media outlets, you know, they're not putting it on there as a remembrance. They're putting it on there as a way of garnering audience. If they thought that on that day, I cannot buy into that.
Well, I'm not buying into it either, because I'm not attending those functions, and I'm not attributing or contributing.
But it's been like two, right.
Or whatever to it.
Right, it's been like 2 weeks. It's been 2 weeks of this stuff. And for me, on Sunday, September the 11th, 2001, I'll take a moment, and I will reflect, and I will think. And I will remember, and remember thinking above all other things, as we saw the second tower hit on live TV. that this was going to change everything and not for the good?
Well, of course it did. I mean, Pearl Harbor didn't. I mean, you know, that was a watershed date in our history. But nonetheless, I don't want to occupy your time, and I want to express those thoughts. And if I may make respectfully, number three, I wish your daughter very, very quick conclusion to her procedure yesterday.
Well, thank you very much, Jim. She seems to be, I mean, she's certainly in good spirits. She's handling this better than her baby sister did.
Good.
She's, well, main, you know, they, people say, you know, laparoscopy, you know, it's not nearly as bad as open surgery. And it's not. But it is still surgery. And you don't go play, you know, you don't go play three sets of tennis after you're done.
Well, it's an invasion. That's no problem.
Exactly.
You know, that's it. And the body has different means of responding to biological invasions and insults. That's the reason surgery is very serious. All types are. But nonetheless, I wish her a quick recovery. And if I may respectfully make one suggestion, please, sir.
Yes, sir.
And that is, if you could equalize your call spread a little more equitably.
What do you mean by that?
Well, there's some callers who I think hang on too long, and it just gets to the point where I just cut it. I tell you the truth, Bob, we go back a long way. I just cut the program off. I mean, I just hear this stuff, and, you know, I don't like what I hear. I don't like some of the language. Sometimes I indulge in it myself, but very infrequently, and I apologize when I do. But I wish that you would consider that. And when you get to the end of a program and you still have callers hanging on, when one person has been on there for the better part of an hour, maybe you could think about it, okay?
All right, that's fine. That's fine, Jim. I appreciate the input.
Yeah, have a good night.
Take care. Bye now. And, that is something to consider. Well, everything Jim brought up is something to consider. You know, like I said, when September 11th happened, I had not been happy since we had had George Bush foisted upon us by the Supreme Court of the United States. And I thought it rather a certainty that we would not see this go down well. And that the response would be something wildly different than what President Gore. We all too often forget that that is the person who should have been dealing with September 11th on September 11th. That President Gore would not have done what George Bush did. The Republicans are enjoying the opportunity to beat us over that, well, we got too much debt. Where did the debt come from, boys? Where'd the debt come from? An off-the-books war that your boy George started. You know, because, you see, there are going to be things about September 11th and its immediate aftermath that they are not going to mention. And one of those things will be Richard Clark being summoned to the president, to the president's office, the Oval Office, what have you. And being told, find me the link between this and Saddam Hussein, and leaving. And coming back and saying, Mr. President, we've looked at every angle. There's no connection between this and Saddam Hussein. Well, go back and look some more. You're obviously not looking hard enough. I know this was Saddam. That won't be mentioned. The illegal outing of a deep cover CIA analyst, Valerie Plame, will not be mentioned. And as to Jim's genially offered criticism of caller length and so forth, I'll only say this. This is a wildly different format invented by the Horn, by you, by me, than anything else that is available out there. As someone who is a fan of talk radio, of the idea of the format, not the individuals involved, like, you know, well, you know, the laundry list of creeps, Hannity, Limbaugh, Beck, Laura Ingraham, on and on. All too often, people don't get an opportunity to say everything that is on their mind. And if that happens nowhere else, it will happen here. And that's what makes it conversation radio and not talk radio. So we proceed onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Tracy, how are you, dear?
Long time no talk.
Well, I was beginning to fret.
You know, and I was thinking about that while I was on hold. I guess I'm one of those people that keep on the phone for a long time. But I was just thinking about the fact that I hadn't talked to you in a while, but I was going to call the other day, but I was on the line, I think, whatever it was the last time you were on air. Was it Thursday or Friday?
It was Friday.
Okay, I was on hold, and I didn't get on the phone until late Friday, so... I heard part of the show. I think you and Sandra were talking again about football, which I don't understand, and God bless you guys for loving it so. I really don't have much to say, because I think, like Susan, I have been kind of just tuning out and watching cable stuff, because, you know, when you watch stuff on, like, TNT and FX and the whatnot, you get no news interruptions.
True.
So you have no idea what's been going on. So I'm clueless. I mean, other than really clueless. Then I think I heard about on your last show about our president okaying something about what was it about the EPA? What was that?
Well, yeah, he told Lisa Jackson to pull proposed air quality standards that would have cleaned up the air sufficiently to save the lives of tens of thousands of Americans who would have innocently died otherwise.
Okay. Yeah. Another way until 2013 thing?
Yeah.
See, here's my problem, because like you said, I mean, 2013, so this is 2011, and so we're supposed to wait 2 years for stuff to kick in or things to get better?
Yeah, and if he's not reelected, those things never happen. I got a great example of that right here. Rick Goodhair Perry, former Yell leader of the Texas A&M Aggies, and up-in-the-air junior birdman for the Texas Air National Guard, defending Texas from the Viet Cong, you know, just like his buddy George.
Like his homeboy George.
Yeah. In an article by the Houston Chronicle today, during a stump speech in his home state of Burning, Texas, said, "I'll tell you one thing, the EPA officials we have an opportunity to put in place, they're going to be pro-business. There's not going to be any apologies to anybody about it. Those agencies won't know what hit them."
Okay, see, you know, here's my problem with that idiot, with what he said, because after you started saying Rick Perry, I just kind of tuned out.
Sorry.
But the problem with, you know, him, all these things, aren't these companies still making profit with all these regulations?
Hand over fist.
Okay, so what is your problem? I mean, you guys are still making money, and, you know, aside from them, throwing, you know, the mountains in your neck of the woods, and they're still, you know, and we're still, you guys are fighting that fight, but up to that part and all the small other basket and parts of the country, with all these regulations in effect, they are still making money. So what in the world? How much more money do you guys need to make? Because see, if you kill us all, because we don't have clean air, we don't have clean water to drink, we don't have good, you know, safe food to eat, and we don't have to worry about dying of botulism and typhoid fever and all these things that have basically been taken care of because we have these regulations. If you kill off all your people that are going to buy shit, what do you want? Oh, I'm sorry. Then you go to India and China.
Right. And another report came out, I saw today, noted that the job creators in China, they're looking outside of China now for people who will work for less money than the Chinese.
All right, wait a minute. As bad as it is here, and from what I understand, there are places. I mean, you look at the famine and drought in several countries in Africa. These people will be willing to work for less than what the Chinese are getting, more than likely, right?
Mm-hmm. And it'll get there sooner or later.
It's going to be there sooner than later. And I'm not a doomsday person. I try not to be. As a matter of fact, with my famous, semi-breakdown, I have so many things that are going on in my head that I can't shut down my brain. So, KPFK, right before I left for San Francisco, was having a fund pledge. And, if you pledge or whatever, then fund drive, that's what it is. And they were, if you pledge a certain amount of money, then you get, what they call add-ons. So one of the add-ons that I'm getting, or soon to be getting, are meditation classes. On learning how to meditate, and from what I'm hearing about the classes, because, they had testimonials from people who have taken the class. And these people have said they've had life-changing experiences because of actually, learning how to meditate. And I know there's something happening in my head, and like I said, I cannot turn it down. I can't, for whatever reason, turn off my brain. And I need to be happy. And with the way things are going around in this country, it is so easy not to be happy, and they want us not happy, and they want us miserable, and they want us to that point like me. Like I said, I was on the couch for 5 years and did not function for 5 years because I just could not get my life together. But if I learned how to meditate and more people learn how to meditate and take their minds off the shit and the craziness that is going on and actually be able to concentrate on good things and then learning how to do them once they get their minds straight, and then concentrating on getting this country back together, what do you think will happen then?
Well, probably something that the corporatists and the Koch brothers and the rest of that crowd really don't want to have happen.
Pretty much. And I'm like thinking to myself, I'm going to do this. I am going to take these classes. It's a series. They start this weekend, and it's four Sundays in a row. And then after that, you get CD on learning further how to go deeper into your meditation. So, I don't know. I mean, it can hurt to me. I mean, and I know somewhere my mother, the Christian, is freaking out about this. But what's the difference between going into meditation and going into prayer?
Actually, I think the meditation is probably more useful.
That's what I'm saying. To me, if you could get, because, I've tried yoga and stuff, which I would love to get into, but the thing is, there has to be that mind shutting down and that relax and that state of peace that, like I said, I cannot seem to ever get to. And so it was just crazy when I heard, because I haven't had a chance really to listen to KPFK, and just so happens, I turn it on, and the day I turn it on during the pledge drive is the day they start talking about these classes. And I'm really, really excited because I am a very reactionary person. I am very high strung. I don't know if you noticed that from our conversation.
We always seem the soul of mellow.
I try desperately to be mellow. I try. And I'm at that point where I'm really, I was on medication for my depression and whatnot and so forth, but it didn't work. And it made me feel worse than it did, without the medication. And I'm listening and thinking about Big Pharma and watching all these commercials for Cymbalta and all the different things. If you don't feel good, take a pill. It'll make it all go away. And I am not saying that people should not take drugs because the problem, you know, when you're bipolar and anybody that's had any issues with mental illness, a lot of things work for a while and then they stop working. So you have to constantly, you know, change all these different levels of medication. And I don't want to keep doing that. I want to, if I have to start taking medication again, that's fine. But like I said, I want to try this meditation route and see how that goes and then go from there. You know, I think the combination of learning how to meditate, because that's one of the things that when I was in therapy, one of my therapists was telling me that I should learn how to meditate. And I think a combination of medication and therapy, maybe that I might not need to take medication again. Who knows? I don't know. But something, you know, because at the rate we're going in this country and, you know, fascism and this out-and-out craziness, and like you said, they're trying to get a state religion. That scares me more than, and I'm a Christian, but it frightens me. Because the Christian, the kind of Christian that I am, are nowhere near the kind of Christian these people are. And I'm going to say, that guy, those guys, they're scary, crazy people. Because they are not tolerant, they're bigoted, and they are so far askew from what Jesus, the teachings of Jesus, I don't get it. And I don't get the fact, and it's like, these people, and I'm thinking to myself, what Bible are you reading? And then it goes against this. People who are supposedly are Christians, not reading their own Bibles, not opening up the Bible and reading and actually reading the Bible. They're just as bad as people who listen to Rush Limbaugh. Does Rush Limbaugh claim to be a Christian, by the way?
Nominally, yes. He won't. I've never known him to push back against the religion industry. But he can't get too loud about it, seeing how he's on, like, wife number 3 or 4 and her face is already on milk cartons all over Florida because nobody's seen her. That and the fact that he got busted using a false prescription to take a bottle of Viagra to the Dominican Republic, notorious for being a place where dirty old men go to have sex with sleek little boys.
Mm-hmm. But he's not gay.
Oh, no.
But, okay, then he's a pedophile. Ooh.
Well, there's that.
It's so funny, because speaking of that, hilarious.
Well, you know, sometimes there's something that sort of goes unnoted, Sandra. I'm sorry, Tracy.
I'm the other black one.
Stop that. I knew that was coming. Damn it. No, there's something that goes unnoted, and that is, you know, things that are the laws concerning libel and slander are telling outright falsehoods about somebody is actionable even if you're a public figure. And okay. I'm not the first person, and I'm certainly not the most public person to have noted that Limbaugh went to an island where there's a lot of illicit sex with little boy prostitutes. Okay. And that, you know, the apple falleth not far from the tree and that sort of thing. Limbaugh has never sued anyone who said that. You know why? Because he would be put to the proof of his claim. And that includes defenses, and the defense to libel and slander, truth, is an absolute defense against those charges. So he don't want to go in no court over it, and he just, you know, doesn't mention it a lot, and you know, he's not out there defending the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi or anything, but he won't push back against them. The only time that he's ever actually shut up about an issue, Tracy, is when the ACLU saved his filthy lard ass.
The ACLU saved him?
Yes. You might recall that at one point he was charged with doctor shopping. When he would run around from physician to physician trying to find his next pill fix. State of Florida charged him with doctor shopping. In fact, there's a man in the Florida state prison system still doing hard time for less than what Limbaugh did.
Isn't it kind of like what they were saying was happening with Michael Jackson? The doctor shot. It's so funny because, but before I forget,
but well, just to finish, the ACLU jumped in on Limbaugh's behalf. And he has never to this day. Now, before that, it was, oh, these filthy communists, my friends, the filthy communists of the American Civil Liberties Union. Then they defended his ass and saved his ass. And guess what? He ain't said nothing about him since. They could have a gay pride parade right down the street in front of his house, and that ACLU banner wouldn't never get mentioned.
That's a good thing. But what I was thinking about, just so happens yesterday, one of my, you know, on USA, I guess they were doing a marathon on SBU episodes. And just so happens, the one of the episodes was about this travel agency that they specialize in what they call exotic vacations, where they send, you know, people, men, to different countries to, you know, have sex with, you know, young boys and girls. And the episode was about that, plus they also were smuggling young boys back into the country and quote unquote adopting them so basically they can be their sex slaves.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the whole NAMBLA thing, you know.
Right. Well, and Thailand is a big destination for that as well.
And that was, I think, the Philippines, they were talking about sending the Texas Munch. He was going to go, he went undercover to arrange a vacation, and they were going to the Philippines. And one of the most disturbing things that the travel agent said was that they worked in conjunction with a orphanage. And I know this stuff is, you know, fiction, and it's on the TV and whatnot and so forth, but the scary part is that, you know, they have to get that information from somewhere. You know, they don't just there's somewhere there's like, you know, there's an orphanage or some other place where they have these kids waiting, being used and abused by these priests. And I'm not going to say that Rush Limbaugh is one of those kind of people because I don't know that for it to be a fact. I don't know that to be true. However.
Well, he was busted in he was busted in Pittsburgh when he was a disc jockey there. The charge was pandering.
And how old was the pandery?
I don't know. I don't know about the pandery, but, you know, he was deep into his 20s at least. He was Jeff Christie.
Jeff Christie?
Yeah, you can still find the air check tapes out there, Tracy. They're repugnant to listen to. He was just spinning oldies, but he was still using the same shtick, the same dumb throwaway lines that he's using today. With talent on loan from God.
See, you know, like I said, first I was in Vegas, and then the following weekend I was in San Francisco. And
yeah, I saw that tweet, and I was you were at some sourdough bakery, and I was just going wild.
Yeah, right now I'm in a Chinese restaurant looking over, trying to decide between the dumpling or the wonton.
Oh, go with the griddle fried dumplings.
Yeah, you know that's what I'm gonna go for. But my thing is, and I was in Chinatown too, and I had really good Chinese food there too. But the thing is, in my travels, you know, as limited as they are, and when I was in San Francisco, because my baby brother lives in San Francisco, and I was driving around, and I saw the hotel that I was thinking about staying at. They were gonna charge me $90, almost $100 a night to basically be in. What is it, the Tenderloin? And anybody that's been in San Francisco, do you know what a Tenderloin is? Basically, for those who have never been to San Francisco, the Tenderloin is basically in any part of the city where it's basically dead drugs. But because it's so expensive in San Francisco, they think they could get away with that. And I'm like, and there were people saying there too. We drove by and I showed my brother. He's like, no, are you serious? $90 a night in the Tenderloin? I'm like, yeah. I say, from now on, when I go to San Francisco, I will be staying in Oakland. because it's easy. You know, I've just got to make sure the place that I stay at is close to the park. But I did have a rental car, so it wasn't that bad. But we are in a – I'm looking at how much things are costing. I'm a roundabout way of talking about how much things are costing. And I've noticed now that in a week, gas down here in L.A. has gone up 30 cents a gallon. What about where you're living?
I just paid $3.60. It bounced down as low as $3.55 and as high as $3.70.
We had gotten down to like, you know, $3.59, and now it's up to like $3.95.
Well, that's because, well, see, that happens at Labor Day. That's because, you know, anybody who says that there isn't antitrust price manipulation isn't paying attention. It goes up at Memorial Day and comes down at Labor Day.
Mm-hmm. And then, because it had gone down, even for Memorial Day, it didn't go up that bad, but it had.
Of course, in in Versailles, Kentucky, a couple of weeks ago, I got it for $3.35 a gallon.
Oh my God, I can't even. $3.35 a gallon. Wow, that is awesome.
Yeah, I know. It was like they were giving gasoline away. Isn't that weird that we can be taken there?
And it's sad that we are such. Suckers. I mean, I'm trying desperately not to think of us as just, you know, lemmings that time. But, you know, we got our president who, I was talking to somebody, I was tweeting back and forth with somebody the other night about our president, and I'm thinking to myself, really? So, I'm hoping that, because we're trying to decide if it was that he was naive and thinking that he can change this country. Or that he was just another George Bush,
I don't think it's an either or, Tracy. I think it's more a matter of we misplaced our expectations. Yeah. I've come to the conclusion, and I'm just learning to live with it, that Barack Obama thinks he is doing everything right and he thinks he is a great president. Now, I was reading an article by Matt Stoller a few days ago in which he pointed out the creepy similarities between Barack Obama and Grover Cleveland. Then today I read an article from Truthout called Goodbye to All That, written by a former Republican staffer that I presume to, well, I don't know who he worked for. But he made reference to the fact that the modern Republican Party is best represented in history by the Democratic Party of, say, John C. Calhoun from South Carolina before the Civil War. So what we've got here, Tracy, is a battle royal between, yeah, really, it's not inspiring, the firebrand, hate-filled, white supremacist John C. Calhoun and the incredibly tepid Grover Cleveland. Hint, Grover Cleveland screwed up so badly that the Republicans retook the presidency immediately away from him.
Wow.
Yeah, you get the idea.
Right.
It ain't encouraging.
No, and my son went to Cleveland. We have the Cleveland High School out here, and my son went to Cleveland.
Well, I always think of Grover Cleveland because, you know, that great American, Ronald Reagan, you know, they're having their little dragnet debate right now. Dum-da-dum-dum-dum. And they'll be fawning all over themselves to praise Ronald Reagan at some point during tonight's debate, pageant, if they haven't already. And whenever I hear Grover Cleveland's name, I think of a remark by Ronald Reagan, you know, deep into his burgeoning senility, when mention was made of President Grover Cleveland, and Ronald Reagan responded, I remember I played him in a movie once, when in fact Reagan had played Grover Cleveland Alexander, the baseball pitcher.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. See, I'm absolutely determined to remember this crap, if for no other reason than to remind the weird little people who think that he was some sort of god or saint, that he was actually a godforsaken ignoramus.
Yeah, I mean, who was the last time we've actually who was our last great president, and not so much, not even great, but just cared about our country, was it?
Well, some would say Clinton, but then I'd get emails from people saying, you know, NAFTA, GATT, and there's a lot of available criticisms there. He was the economically he was the most successful president, Democratic or Republican, of recent vintage. But the last great Democratic president, had it not been for Vietnam, Lyndon Johnson had the air of greatness about him. But he got eaten alive by Vietnam. Jimmy Carter had the potential for greatness, but he was driven into the dirt by his rightward drift and an America that was not ready to deal with reality. And lo and behold, here comes Ronald Reagan and says, well, it's a shining city on a hill. And America went, oh, yes, it is. So Kennedy wasn't even in office long enough to achieve the greatness to which he would have been entitled had he lived. But he did live through tremendous times and kept us from toasting the planet. Yeah, so he gets some cred.
He gets some cred.
But I guess you got to go back to FDR, don't you?
Yeah, we got to go all the way back. How many years?
And remember, Barack Obama don't like him. Barack Obama reads books about Reagan, not FDR.
Doesn't read about FDR. And when I hear stuff like that, I think to myself, really? Seriously? I mean.
But if you just wait till 2013 and we can just get him back into office, well, by golly, he's going to be a totally different Barack Obama. That's when we're going to see the guy that we last saw the night he was elected.
But the thing is about that is you figure, you know, anybody, if you just, when you think about the third term, having three terms, because basically when you're reelected to a second term, you're a lame duck president. It doesn't matter what.
Right. The history of second terms as president is not a good one. In the era after the passage of the Constitutional Amendment banning third terms. I personally, Tracy, would like to see that amendment stricken down.
Yeah, because see, at least we know, because my thing is, it's going to take a full term. When you're elected, you know, remember me, I'm just the newbie when it comes to politics. But if you have a crappy, you know, president, you know, which we did for 8 years of Bush, it's going to take at least a full 4 years to wipe out the bullshit that happened in that term, and then you're going to need that your next term to kind of get things straight, but then you still need another term to kind of clean up the mess, unless you get a press, you know, because I think who was supposed to be real? It was Gore, President Gore. Had Gore been elected?
That's that time machine thing. Had Gore been remember, Tracy, it's not had Gore been elected. Gore was elected.
Had
the election not been stolen from Al Gore, I have no doubt that this country would not be in the mess that it is in. Although, you know, there's one sobering fact about the Gore candidacy that really does take me aback, and that is, for as long as Al Gore was in office, we would have been Joe Lieberman would have been a heartbeat away from the presidency.
Oh, that's right, it was Gore Lieberman.
Yeah. See what I mean? It's kind of sobering, isn't it?
I totally forgot it was Gore Lieberman.
Yeah.
You think about the Gore thing. You think, okay, Al Gore would have been a good president and stuff like that. Okay, these things are really hot. By the time I finish talking to you, maybe I can eat them. But they're really pretty.
Well, Tracy, I will leave you to your dinner to enjoy it, and I hope we will talk soon.
We will talk soon, but like I said, you know, let's just hope and pray. I don't know. I like I said, I still don't know how hard I'm going to be working for this 2012 campaign, but I think about the alternative.
Well, sure. And no thinking person can avoid that. But I've come to a place where I'm absolutely convinced now. I'm going to do my one little lone sole voter, one voter thing, And I'm going to leave his name blank in the Democratic primary in May of 2012. And I hope a lot of other people will do the same.
Well, last time I checked on those verifications that I was actually watching the news, they did say that his approval ratings are not bad, but just of out-and-out system.
Well, maybe it'll be the wake-up call he desperately needs.
Oh, my God, Bob, these are really good.
Yummy. Enjoy them.
I'm going to let you go to have a wonderful and blessed day, and I will talk to you.
Well, just think of me while you're enjoying them.
Oh, my God, they're so good.
Yeah, with what I've been going through, I'll be eating a bowl of chicken broth after the show, so yuck. See you, Tracy.
All right, baby, I'll talk to you soon.
All right, bye. Bye-bye. Ooh, I love me some dim sum. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, hi, yes, Keith from Queens again.
Oh, hey, Keith, how you doing, buddy?
Good, good. It's been certainly an eventful week on the East Coast, or an eventful couple weeks. Those who wanted to doubt climate change should remember we've had an earthquake, a hurricane, and now we're getting the aftermath of another hurricane. So, and we had a tornado last year in Queens. So, you know, those of you who don't believe in radical climate changes and such, I mean, just look around. I really don't see, like, unless you close
your
eyes. Yeah,
it really is one of those live in the real world moments, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, I admit, you know, every 50 years the New York City does get a hurricane. But, you know, we have had more dramatic weather shifts in New York over the last, I'd say, 4 or 5 years than I've ever remembered.
And beyond that, Keith, beyond anything that has been historically recorded.
Oh, yeah, no, it's all out there. I mean, this is what gets me crazy is, you know, when the head of NASA's climate science, James Hansen, and thank you, by the way, for going and getting arrested and doing what you had to do.
No, let's be clear. I did not get arrested. I did not get arrested.
Okay, well, thank you for going to do that.
I provided arrestee support. Somebody's got to go over to the wilds of Anacostia and pick folks up, and that's what we do.
Oh, yeah, I've done that before. But, you know, thank you for participating in that. I unfortunately was in New York and couldn't, but, you know.
Well, I have a feeling there will be more coming.
Oh, I'm sure there will, because the idea of oil sands blows my mind. I mean, it's like, it's basically strip mining for oil, you know. I mean, simply, you know, drilling wells off the coast of this country and destroying, like, our lovely coral beds in the Caribbean and, you know, the wildlife off of California and Alaska isn't enough. Now we're going to start, like, basically taking the Yukon tundra and stripping that away while we continue, as you always point out, and, you know, I certainly so sympathize with you in terms of and empathize with you concerning, you know, what has been done in Appalachia, you know, which is like now that we can't get it under the ground, let's just remove the mountains, which is like totally insane. But, you know, we're now doing that with oil, too. You know, we're basically taking whole swaths. I mean, when you look at it, it looks just like strip mining. It's basically the same concept. You know, it's basically like...
Well, as I
siphon out, you know, what you need.
Right. It's terrible. And just to add a little bit of detail into the mix as far as the Keystone XL pipeline is concerned, which should really be named the Koch Brothers pipeline... our buddy Tosh, who is on the real speaking terms with mathematics, dropped me a note today, Keith, and he said, the possible spill volume for a one-foot diameter pipe would be 324,840 cubic feet of tar sand sludge.
Which we're running through places like Yellowstone.
Yeah,
you know,
and I mean they've got their little nasty AstroTurf front groups cranking up in Nebraska, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
They're all over.
Yeah, no, but I mean we're basically going to run this through like Yellowstone National Park. We're going to run it through parts of Nebraska which have some of the last really ecologically intact prairie land left. We're going to, I mean, it's utterly insane. It's insane too because it's like, one, the last thing we need to do, I mean, this is, you know, as I think one, I forget who said it, but said this is like, this will be the greatest of the carbon checks written, you know, I mean, this will be totally insane. And again, no one's, you know, I mean.
Well, you know, Tracy was talking about the price at the pump. The price at the pump is not going to be affected by a penny by this thing.
Of course not. Nor does it affect if tomorrow we sat down and literally drilled up the Alaskan wilderness, drilled off of the Pacific coast, drilled off of the Atlantic coast, which they're talking about now in great, you know, fervor, drilled off, you know, it still wouldn't matter because one, all we would do is, unless we change our insane addiction to oil and to coal and to all these things, we're simply going to destroy this earth. You know, I mean, we're doing it. And I fear, you know, I mean, it makes no sense ecologically, and it makes no sense economically, because, I mean, you can't have an economy if you don't have an earth. So, you know, it's as simple as that.
Yeah, no climate, no business climate.
Yeah, no climate, no nothing, you know. I mean, the one thing I feel blessed in living in New York City is I don't own a car. I take the subway everywhere. I take buses. But, you know, I understand that for most of my fellow Americans, that's not an option. And when I've left New York City and gone to a lot of other places, I'm amazed that if you don't have a car, you're basically stranded.
Yeah, as I think Reverbo noted, there's no bullet train leaving Columbia, South Carolina yet.
No. And unfortunately, the way things are going, there's not going to be for quite a while. And that's really sad because we could... What we should be doing is building light rail all over the place. There's no reason you can't have light rail going up and down this country. You know, we should have as good a rail system as most of Europe has, as Japan has, as China is very quickly acquiring. And what's particularly sad is the railroads going back 60, 70 years ago, or maybe 80, 90 years ago. But, you know, the railroads were a very important part of this country in terms of moving people. And they still are to some degree in moving things. But,
Well, there's one little factor to mention in here, and that is this. If you go to book an Amtrak ride, Amtrak has never been booked more solid. Amtrak is used all over this country to absolute capacity. And yet these godforsaken, good-for-nothing Republicans, well, see, Amtrak's a failure.
No, I'll be honest with you. If you built more rail, people would use it. I have no doubt people would use it. If you built light rail, if you built ways of people getting from suburb to city, because, you know, in metropolitan New York, we have it, and it's certainly used.
Well, now, compare my reality, Keith. I mean, you know what my family and family history means to me. I have an old photograph that shows a very dapper, youngish man done up in his Sunday best, standing in front of a steam locomotive, you know, the old school type. It's that far back. And he's standing in front of the Anstead, West Virginia station. He's about to get aboard that train and go down to Charleston, about 50 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe he's going to take in a minor league baseball game. Oh, Lord, what a baseball fan he was. Or maybe he'll stop in a tavern and have a beer. Maybe he'll do one of his favorite things and go to the local men's shop. It was called Frankenburgers. And maybe he'll pick up a new hat. He loved hats. Or maybe he'll get a new suit. Now, this is a coal miner, mind you, with no greater than an eighth grade education. And that ride to Charleston is not going to cost him a lot. And it is a passenger train. Well, that train hasn't run for eons. Now, me, if I want to go to Charleston, West Virginia, I got to get in a vehicle. I got to buy fuel at baseline, $3.50 a gallon. Drive down a winding, curving road at which I can't do much more than 35, 40 miles an hour. Drive through speed traps all the way there. Park. Pay for parking. Drive all over because there's no interconnection between anything in that metro area. And then lather, rinse, repeat to get home. Who had the better transportation system, Keith?
I think your grandfather or father did.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
Your grandfather or father who
and maybe that's
option.
Maybe that's one of the things that we're not doing. We are not viewing that because we've got I've got a little computer in my pocket. Life must therefore be better.
Well,
but it ain't necessarily. We have gone backwards, and you do have the luxury of the subway and a fairly civilized transportation system where you live there in New York. Me?
You want to know something? We would never and the funny thing I was about to mention is, unfortunately, running these transportation systems and keeping them affordable is not always cost efficient. But even in New York City, despite all the problems of the NTA and such, if you look at the history of the New York City subway system, originally these were all privately owned. Eventually, the city took them over and formed the MTA simply because the overall benefits to society of having mass transportation is well worth subsidizing it.
Right, because cost effectiveness is not always either the best or most effective measure of social utility. Everything does not have to be measured out to the last penny, does it?
No, well, hey, you don't have to tell me that. Remember, I'm a healthcare provider, and I'll tell you right now, if you get capitalism out of healthcare, we would have a very nice, affordable healthcare system in this country, and we could provide everyone with a high quality of healthcare. But as, you and I have started this discussion, and I know you have championed it, what we need is public options, because if we give people public options, I have no doubt within time, we would have a one-payer system. We would still have private doctors, we'd still have private voluntary hospitals and clinics and nursing homes and such, but the government would basically be the person who would pay the bills. It could be done very quickly and efficiently, and it would save billions and billions of healthcare dollars, trillions, and create thousands of jobs, millions of jobs. I mean, it's all there to do. It's just a matter of someone having the vision and someone being willing to take on the special interest groups, which is no easy matter. I'm not saying it's a simple thing to do. But again, it's just so obvious. And it's the same thing with mass transportation. I mean, once you have it, you don't want to get, all these teabaggers and all these Republicans I know who are like, I don't want the government messing with my health care. Okay, we'll take away Medicare. What, are you crazy? Blah, 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 blah. Medicare works wonderfully. If we gave everyone in this country Medicare, we'd save a fortune. And we'd have pretty good efficient health care. And believe me, the people to ask about this are not the insurance executives and the accountants and stuff. It's the nurses and doctors, as we'll all tell you. And the number of physicians these days who are for, major healthcare reforms grows in leaps and bounds every year. Because many of them are just so tired of having to hire small armies of people to figure out the forms, to figure out what they get paid and what they don't get paid. And a lot of them are also tired of saying no to people who don't have insurance or having to provide them with markedly inferior care.
Well, during the show, I monitor the chat room as well as do the show itself. And I just saw a remark in the chat room from our buddy Benedict at Large. Get this, Keith. I mean, if you feel compelled to run screaming into the street, that'll be okay, and I'll understand. Perry says Texas doesn't want a health care plan like Massachusetts.
That's very interesting because...
he's got how many millions of people uninsured in his state?
Many, many.
Yeah.
Texas, I mean, frankly, I'm willing, I'll take on Rick Perry. It's very simple. Just point out to him what his state real, you know, yeah, he's created more jobs. He's created government jobs. The private sector isn't booming in Texas. What happened was they added government after government job. Okay, and that's well documented.
Right,
that's
but
in Texas.
Yeah, it's well documented. It's well documented, Keith. But at the same time, we have to remember the government has never created not one single job.
You know, the funny thing is, you know, the other day, it's very interesting, you know, because I've been living in New York, but even just in being a student of history, you know, me and my son's 11 years old, and, you know, I've talked to you about Carl at times, you know, and we go, today we went to the Central Park Zoo, okay, and we're sitting at the Central Park Zoo, and we're reading about the history of the Central Park Zoo, and the history of the WCS. The history of the Staten Island Zoo, which is a zoo outside of the WCS, but the sixth zoo in New York City. And, all of this stuff, so much of it that still stands was built by the WPA. You know, last time we had a depression in this country, we had the vision to borrow and build infrastructure. And most of that infrastructure is still here to this day. You know, it's still here. It's still functioning. Me and my son spent the whole summer swimming at a public pool in Astoria, Queens, which is a beautiful Art Deco pool overlooking the East River and the Triborough Bridge, also built during the Depression on WPA money. But, you know, I mean...
Yeah, that's right, Keith. So, rub it in. Just keep rubbing it in.
You know, no, I'm not rubbing it in.
No, I know, I know.
I'm pointing out to people that this is the way out of this one, too. You know, it's time to rebuild the infrastructure. And to be honest with you, this is not the time to worry about long-term debt. I mean, because right now, we can borrow money at next to nothing. When you can borrow money at next to nothing, you borrow it. Especially if you can turn it into something that will be worth something and pay you dividends for decades to come. You know, and Roosevelt was smart enough to understand that, and he built, you know, and much of what he built is still there. The other, probably my favorite Republican president is probably Dwight David Eisenhower, who again, you know, a brilliant...
Public spending.
Public spending, yes. He built the highway system. He also gave the best speech, I think one of the best speeches anyone ever gave. You know, this was a man who spent his whole life in the military and such. And what did he say as he was leaving? Beware of the military-industrial complex. Understand that every bomber we build is a school we won't build, is a hospital that won't be modernized, is, you know, someone in the... You know, in the butter economy, if you're looking at the guns and butter analogy they always make in economics, someone in the butter economy who will do without. You know, so again, you know, it is, if we study history, if we just look at history, unfortunately we don't always study history in this country anymore. And, you know, one of the things I find so refreshing about your show and yourself is, you know, people who come on this show have a sense of history, and you yourself are a wonderful history teacher. I must say that. It is so important. You know, my own child, I teach history to constantly. You know, when I teach my art class to children at his school, history. History is just so important because, as, you know, Santayana says, you know, those who don't study history are simply doomed to repeat it. Which we did.
Yeah,
there,
yeah, and there's a reason.
Glass-Steagall, and look what happened.
Yeah, there's a reason the word doom appears in that sentence, Keith.
Yeah.
You know, it's not people who don't. It's not people who learn history get to repeat it. It's they are doomed to repeat it because, typically speaking, the repetition of history is the repetition of a mistake.
Of course. You know, I mean, how many people really know that Roosevelt was almost overthrown in this country? You know this, of course.
Yeah,
you know,
when they went to Smedley Butler and asked him to lead the coup.
Yeah, who again is one of my other nine greatest heroes of American history nobody knows about. General Smedley Butler, yes, who wrote one of the best books in the world, which is basically, may I paraphrase the title, I think it is War is a Racket.
That is it. And and it can be found out there. It's still, I think I found it on Google Books one day.
Oh, okay, good. You know, I'm just saying, I mean, again, a wonderful book. I suggest everybody read it. You know, if you read nothing else, read General Smiley Butler's War is a Racket. Read Confessions of an Economic Hitman. I'll give you a whole list of books to read, and then we can discuss things, you know, because they're like, again, it's like history. Read history, you know, and also read in between the lines of history, because much of the history you're taught in school has
and that's what
history.
That's, you know, and that's where Howard Zinn comes in.
Oh, yes. Again, one of my heroes, someone who I've read profusely, you know, Howard Zinn, also some of the, like one of the best things that came out of the American experience was the whole thing they did on Native American history. I don't know if you saw any of those, We Shall Remain.
No.
Oh, go watch them. They're usually available online, you know, you can just go to your PBS website, and you can watch them right online. They're wonderful. They have a very good one about the Pilgrims and the Indians and King Philip's War and that whole relationship. They have a wonderful one on Tecumseh. They have a wonderful one on Geronimo. They have a very good one on... They have one on the Trail of Tears, which is amazing. I learned things from that one. You know, I never knew that the Cherokees won in the American Supreme Court.
Yeah.
You know, the American Supreme Court said the Cherokees had every right to keep their land and such, but, you know, Andrew Jackson evoked for that first time states' rights, you know, states' rights that have a long, ugly tradition, you know.
Yeah, I've gotten to a place where I just don't think much of Andy Jackson anymore.
No, I never liked him to begin with, but, you know, everything from the war and, you know, the Battle of New Orleans, which was fought 2 weeks after this treaty was signed, but nobody, in those days, you couldn't get the news out fast enough, to many of the things he did were not very smart. But, you know, he was Andy Jackson. He was, I guess, the first populist president in certain levels. And, you know, and...
No, the first American-born president, too, wasn't he?
Well, I don't know. Was Madison born... Well, Washington and Madison and stuff, I believe.
No, they were born before the Revolution.
Okay. But they were born in North America, I believe, you know.
Yeah. But I mean, born post the winning of the Revolution.
Yeah, no, I guess he was, but yeah, I would probably say he was. But it's, you know, it's like, you know, history is, you know, and then we come to 9/11, which, as a New Yorker, is for me really difficult because I have such mixed feelings. You know, I mean, I was sitting there with my 1.5-year-old son at the time, you know, in bed. My wife had just gotten into work. She was working at the time at the Chrysler Building. You know what the Chrysler Building, and I know most people do.
Yes.
In New York City. And, you know, when I saw the second plane hit the World Trade Center, I immediately called her up. I said, you know, you are to get out of the Chrysler Building right now. You know, I don't care what your boss says. Tell him, you know, go up yourself for all I care. You're getting out of the Chrysler Building, get on that last express bus and get back, you know, home, because this isn't good. You know, I know for a day or two, I think if you were a thinking, feeling person, you couldn't have a couple of tears in your eyes. I think a lot of people sat down and cried. But the remarkable thing about New York City, and I know people think I'm crazy when I say this, especially people who weren't in New York City, was, you know, New York City was very divided over that. There were many of us who, you know, immediately said things like an eye for an eye will just make us blind. You know, revenge is not what we need immediately.
No. The idiots waving the bloody shirt were largely not in New York City, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, no, I mean, we were outraged. Don't get us wrong. Don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, I love this city. You know, I love this country, too. I mean, I may tell you that, you know, I think it has gone horribly wrong. You know, but I stay here. You know, I thought very seriously about moving to Canada once or twice. Half my relatives live abroad. But, you know, I stay here because this is my country. I have every right to be here and believe the way I believe. You know, and I'm not going away. That would be too easy for, you know, these assholes who are running it and stuff at times. You know, I'm not going away. I will say my say.
You've got your back up, as we'd say.
Yeah. And 9/11, what was a real rough time. And what was a rough time about it was, you know, when people would ask me, they'd say, how did they, why did they do this to us? How could they hate us, though? I was like, you don't understand, do you? You know, the World Trade Center maybe to you represents these beautiful pillars of finance and economics, but to a lot of people in the third world and a lot of people outside of this country, it represents probably some of the worst parts of capitalism and American greed. You know, the Pentagon, I mean, I respect people who serve this country. I certainly respect armed forces. I understand that many of those people in Iraq and Afghanistan are probably there because it'd be like pumping gas or working at Walmart when they got out of high school, you know, and there wasn't money to go to college. you know, that's
well, all you have to do, Keith, is consider the reality in places like where I am.
Oh, very much so. And
you know, this little two-bit high school up the road from here graduates, oh, I don't know, 50, 75 kids every spring.
And the military recruiters waiting.
Yeah, they're camped out. Boys go into the military, and boys go into the mines, and a tiny fraction of them go to college.
Right. No, and that unfortunately is becoming the reality all over this country. You know, and that's sad. But I have no doubt in my mind, again, the Pentagon to me is not a nice place. You know, to me it is not this wonderful place of respect and honor. It's basically a place that functions to perpetuate this killing machine that is the American military. I mean, which, you know, I often said when people said to me, well, how would you have responded?
Yeah, it's not disrespectful to note that the military is not a social service agency. It is a structural arm of government whose job is to blow things up, kill people, and break things.
Right. You know, and we do it very efficiently. You know. I don't know if we do it efficiently or not.
When you look at what a gallon of gas costs in Afghanistan, Keith.
That's true. Okay,
The efficiency model goes down when you consider the long-term costs to the broken human spirits and bodies that the American government, our government, doesn't like, well, especially in the hands of Republicans, doesn't like to consider on the backside of wars. You know, I was talking with a Vietnam veteran, my buddy Bo Webb, the other day. He was Marine artillery, and we were talking about, you know, the backlash, the veterans backlash of, you know, the after effects of Vietnam. And he said, you know, he agreed with me that we have no idea what is coming 10, 20, 30 years down the road from Iraq and Afghanistan.
Oh, no, I do have an idea, and we should brace ourselves. I mean, as someone who is a nurse who works with, you know, psychiatric-based issues very often. I work with AIDS patients, but I work with people who are substance abuse addicted, who are mentally ill. The PTSD that we have inflicted on a generation, it is mind-numbing to me what this is both going to cost in dollars, and the effects this is going. You cannot put people in military theaters. You know, Vietnam, at least they had the common sense that after a year or so, they got you out. And they told you you weren't going back for a certain amount of time.
Meanwhile, yeah, now in this era, we have men committing suicide rather than go back for their ninth deployment.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you can't do that to people. You know, you just can't and have them come out normal. You really can't. So I have a very good idea what's coming down the road, and
well, given your area of expertise,
you know, we have no idea what box of shit we opened up with that, because it's going to be horrible. It's going to be very horrible.
You know, our buddy Mark in Florida, a former a Marine himself, recommends the documentary The Corporation. And he says it contains footage of MacArthur, Patton, and Eisenhower attacking U.S. veterans' bonus army with Gatling guns, small cannons, and horses.
Oh, very much so.
Such patriotism. Yeah.
Well, that's how MacArthur got his claim to fame before he waltzed off to the Pacific to lose the Philippines and then regain it. You know, was basically, you know, he was the general who led the charge into that bonus army. And, you know, that was our first inclination of how we treat our veterans, you know. I mean, that was really scary. In the midst of the Great Depression, here are these...
Oh, I lost... Oh. Sorry, Keith. We will continue this perhaps another evening. Let's go forward in the time remaining. Oops. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Preston.
How you doing, man?
I'm well. Yourself?
Doing all right. And I second the recommendation of The Corporation for sure.
I've seen it myself, and it's wow.
Yeah. And it includes a section on General Smedley Butler and how big business tried to recruit him for a coup against FDR.
Exactly. And you know, we have to remember that the triggering effect that caused him to write War as a Racket was him looking back on his own career and realizing that even in the late 19th and early 20th century, he had basically been a hitman for corporate America, whether it be China, the Philippines, Nicaragua, or Haiti.
That's right.
He had always been there to protect an American corporate interest.
Yep. And he had been awarded, you know, the highest honors. A couple of times he got the Congressional Medal of Honor. And I'm not sure what his turning point was exactly, but... You know, it was just too much. The cognitive dissonance?
Yes.
Yeah, it was overwhelming. And he started to speak out against it. Yeah, and wrote that great book, War is a Racket, for sure. And, you know, they try to frame progressive people as anti-military, but, you know, we're so often listening to people who have been in the military, like Butler and Howard Zinn, who was a World War II bombardier.
Consider the way that George McGovern was slimed by Richard Nixon. And here's a guy who had flown combat missions in a B-17 over Germany, as compared to Nixon did what in the Second World War? Answer, not much.
Right. John Kerry, another great example. And another great movie, Going Up River, that was about John Kerry's Vietnam experience. And it was way more radical than I was expecting.
It had certain Apocalypse Now elements to it, didn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, not going after Kurtz per se, because that's basically the Heart of Darkness. But no, I mean, those rivercraft were not for the faint of heart. And that was duty he requested, was it not?
That's right. And it's astonishing that someone like George Bush and the whole Swift Boat crew could do what they did during that campaign.
And yet we see it happening all over again with the rise of this imagery. It's a thing that was put together by some godforsaken right winger that shows heroic Rick Perry standing in his Roger Ramjet flight suit on the ladder by his fighter in which he was flying over Texas defending against the Viet Cong incursions across the Rio Grande. And next to it is a picture of Barack Obama at 22 years old, the same age. Wearing a Huggy Bear hat with a cigarette dangling off his lip. One is 1972, Rick Perry. The other is 1983, Barack Obama. And it's pure sleaze.
It is sleaze, big time. And speaking of veterans and Obama connections, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, who also served, and who was actually involved with the health care of LBJ when he was in the military. I think he was a surgeon of some sort.
Yes. I think he was I don't think he was a surgeon. I think he wasn't he some sort of med tech or corpsman of some sort?
There you go.
But that's so often the case. You know, there are those stories that came out after the Second World War of British soldiers and some Americans who hooked up or met up with their German counterparts from the North Africa campaign. And they didn't hate each other. They bought each other rounds of beer. And there are the stories of those from Vietnam who have gone back for a sense of personal rapprochement.
Yeah, and some of them to do some demining efforts, which is such a huge project. I mean, the amount of unexploded ordnance and landmines that we left behind.
Yeah, that are ours.
Yeah.
It's not like the North Vietnam, you know, the NVA isn't cleaning up its own mines. No, especially over in Laos. Oddly enough, one of the people who covered it admirably, you know, even in the strangest places, Anthony Bourdain. His Laos episode contains a specific trip to a demining operation.
Yes, that was a fantastic episode. I applaud that guy for what he did with that show. Amazing. He even sat down with a gentleman who had lost a leg or an arm to a landmine and ate soup with him and tried to,
tried to come to his own grips.
Yeah. That was amazing. So, I've caught a couple of the Bourdain shows recently. I've also been watching another food show. Have you caught Diners, Dives, or Drive-Ins, or something like that?
A couple of times, yeah. Is that on Food Network?
It is, and it's the guy with the spiky blonde hair, and he's kind of, I think he does a great job. At first, you know, I think I had kind of a reflexive dismissal of him, but as I watch his show.
Yeah, he doesn't instill in me or provoke in me, Preston, the sense of abject and utter loathing that Bourdain's colleague Adam Richman does. That guy just triggers my gag reflex.
Yeah, and that whole approach to food, you know, just
watch me eat enough food to feed a Somali village for a week
in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's pretty repulsive.
I mean, why not put a damn toga on him and a vomitorium in the next room and give him a throat tickling feather and have done with it?
Right. I'd love to see the outtakes of that show. I'm sure he's lost it a few times. But one thing in the defense of even those repulsive shows is that he will always go to the family-owned, the independent restaurants. He'll never go to a chain. And you recently here in Colorado, I noticed one of the Perkins filed for bankruptcy, and I think people are seeking some of the more independent restaurants.
You know, it took me 5 years to get back there, but I called Boss Man Wayne the night that we did it. You know, I was in D.C. recently, and we happened to be staying up in an area called Thomas Circle. And down just a block away on Vermont Avenue, two blocks, well, a block, and well, whatever, was this little downstairs place called Stan's. And I introduced my buddies Mickey and Bo to Stan's, and they don't ever want to get anywhere. They don't go anywhere else in D.C. for staying. Because it's so real, and it's so, it's not corporate. You know, it's a neighborhood tavern where they, oh, God, they pour with a very free hand. But the food, you know, the catfish nuggets haven't come from the freezer. They've come from the fish market down by the Navy Pier or somewhere around in there. These chicken wings that are unlike anything. Oh my God.
Yep.
I mean, they're meat candy. And on and on and on, and just the friendliest people. And you can't get that walking into Perkins.
Yeah, yeah. And kind of connected to all that, and you know, local food, and even pouring with a friendly hand. I just got back from the community-supported agriculture project that I'm a member of. It's this family farm in northern Colorado called Grant Family Farms, and one of their workers was at the pickup point, which is just a few blocks from where I live. They have several along the Front Range of Colorado, but the one I go to is just about 10 blocks from where I live at a kind of a center for urban core workers who are doing good work themselves, and they let Grant Family Farms put out the produce of the week for the, you know, people who've invested in the farm and to help the family farmer out. And so they had this representative of the farm there just to kind of share bread, and because they sell shares of bread that they make as well. And they had some cherry wine.
Oh.
So it was a little party. It was a good time. And I learned that there are 4,200 members of this one farm in northern Colorado. And it's big. I mean, food is such a core, intimate topic and connected to energy issues and, of course, human health issues and health of the soil and health of the farm workers. Hey, Thomas Jefferson, you know, talked a lot about the importance of family farms, and these agribusiness firms like Monsanto and Cargill and ADM, the food overlords of the world, you know, they're starting to feel the nips were taken at their heels, and it's fun to see. And one of the many alternatives we have to destroying this beautiful planet of ours. So if people see an opportunity, you know, websites like localharvest.org or maybe planting your own tomato plant or whatever you might have room for.
Yeah, you know, David in Tennessee has a garden he maintains in his backyard.
Great.
By his own, you know, by his own design. It's not huge, but he got I got a note from him a couple of months back. Bob, what the hell is this? Because a volunteer had showed up in his garden. Well, he is in Tennessee after all.
yeah.
Is that a cucumber? No, it was a volunteer cantaloupe. And just, he said, produced the most beautiful, rich, sweet things you would, well, it was just, it was breakfast candy for the few that he got off of there.
Wow.
And tomatoes, you know, he'll be making tomato sauce to get him through the winter because, you know, along about February, the taste of fresh tomato can save your soul.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, me, for my part, I haven't had a garden since the kids were little, but I'm absolutely determined to do it somewhere along the way. I just have to, well, I got to get a tiller. Because I can't garden on a small scale. I have to have enough to, you know, I gotta have 10 feet of corn to walk through, or I'm not happy.
Hey, you know, even if you've got some dandelions that, you know, haven't been totally bombarded with some toxic.
Yeah, no Roundup around here.
You know, and so much of that stuff comes right out of World War One. You know,
it was developed where I grew up.
Okay.
That's where nitrates were turned into high explosives. And then after the Second World War, of course, we've got this here nitrate industry. Maybe we could make fertilizer out of it.
There you go. And, you know, I live across the street from Whole Foods, and if I have the cash, I can buy dandelion greens for, you know, the price of caviar almost. And I'm like, the contradictions are getting so stark.
And they are indeed. Hey, Preston, good talking to you. I hope you won't be too long in calling back. Got to get out of here, brother.
You bet. I've got a whole bunch of notes here of other people's comments, and I'll be catching up with you on them.
All right. Well, that'll be wonderful. We'll talk soon.
Great.
Bye now, Preston. And thus we come to the end of the program. I got to every blinking light but one. How about that? It's time to get out of here. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, the hardest working, bravest people.